The story is not only related with Turkey, but the general trend in world politics. Actually, when, you know, this story is based on a real story, which took place in 2009 in Turkey. But in the mid-2010s, for me, this story became a more globally relevant story because more and more populist, authoritarian, dangerous leaders are coming to power in many countries around the world, and they manipulate the people and they show very easy targets. They show these easy targets as the kind of salvation or the solution of their problems. So I thought that's a quite it's becoming a relevant issue. Of course, I'm also influenced by the Turkish politics, especially after 2016. Turkey became more and more authoritarian. Erdogan is becoming a very, very autocratic leader, and he always believes in his mission. He always says that he has a cause, and he always says that I'm a man of a cause. He doesn't put people into prison just because he wanted it, but cause necessitates it. All these things in my mind convinced me that I should write this story. In the real story, there are two families. They are both village guards, and 12 members of one family raid a wedding and kills 44 people, kids and children. And there's an issue of wealth, land share, and status difference because the perpetrators are losing their status. They have a fear of, as of course, it's my guess. You cannot really understand from the reports. The perpetrators are losing their status, and there's a small religious element because the leader of the first group, called Sheikh, maybe is not intense as in our film. This is the story, actually. But for example, the power struggle between the brothers are made by me. All these fantasies or this twin issue, blah, blah, blah. All these things are made up.
You also focus on what makes these unstable leaders actually so attractive for people. But would you like to expand on this in your own words?
Sometimes they are the only alternative. They can be the only alternative. I mean, in this case, it is a little bit like this. Because, I mean, if you are a sheikh, the only alternative can be his brother. But beyond that, I think the characters think that they can manipulate Mesut easily. On his way to power, they are manipulating. So they think that probably when he is on the power, they can manipulate, they can use him, they can control him. But of course, every time get out of control. I mean, these are two main motivations for these people preparing Mesut to the power. You can say that this film is also about this story. I mean, this kind of, not only this ecstatic religious ritual, but for me, the important thing is this idea of mission. The idea of that you are delivering a message. I mean, it's not your will to kill people. It's an obligation to kill people. Because in all these crimes, generally perpetrators legitimize their acts like this. They are acting according to the rules of the cause. They are acting according to this mission of saving people. For me, this religious issue is functioning like that. The people should believe that they have a mission. They are a selected community, maybe. They should leave. And their existence necessitates killing the others. Yeah, dreams are very important in that sense. I think dreams are working on three levels. First, it reflects the neurotic situation of our protagonist, Mesut. First, we understand his mental situation through dreams. Secondly, it is a medium for mystic religious experiences. In all these mystic traditions, divine orders come through dreams. So in this film also, the villagers convince themselves that divine sound shows the Mesut as the leader. And at the end, it serves as a kind of collective paranoia. Everyone sees more or less the same dreams. Everyone thinks that they are in danger. So it is to underline the paranoia, all these dreams. But at the end, it became a kind of stylistic element. Almost half of the film takes place at night. Generally, in my films, I think the night scenes are quite often. And of course, I mean, we are more tending to be scared in the darkness of the night. So because you cannot see the enemy, you cannot see the threat, where it's coming from. So I used this darkness to elevate the fear. Almost I tried to push to a kind of horror film elements. PKK, yeah. Although they speak Kurdish, they wanted to fight with the soldiers, the Turkish state, against the Kurdish insurgents.
You use a lot of elements from genre film, and you also mentioned that horror inspires you. Are there specific horror films or directors that you appreciate or that influence this film?
I cannot really name a specific name, but I mean, in general, time to time I watch horror films, and there's a general influence rather than I'm not a fan of horror movies, so I'm not really following certain names. It's really becoming rare, not as the old times, but of course, if there's an animosity between two families, kind of semi-feud, and that, yeah, you can share it. But I mean, in the past, it was a big issue. It's like a war. Today, it's not like that, of course. There's gendarme. It is very rare that the films are forbidden in Turkey. It happens, but rare. But they have indirect ways of sense. For example, I'm not funded by the state. I cannot use the facilities of state-sponsored theaters, blah, blah, something like that. Conservative Islamist people can react, maybe. Unfortunately, I heard some reactions from my Kurdish friends because they think that I'm shoving Kurdish people quite in a negative way, but I mean, this is the real story, and national identities are not so important for me. They are soldiers. I mean, there's no difference between Turkish soldiers and Kurdish soldiers. To show them as Kurds does not mean anything, doesn't mean anything to me. They are soldiers, and they're ready to fight for everything, for their land, for their existence, blah, blah.
Mm. You also strongly focus on the duality of good and evil. What does this subject mean for you?
This binary position always works for these kind of people, because when you say that I am good, the other is evil, so the good has the right to destroy the evil. In all these atrocities, the leaders or the people really believe in this. They are destroying, they are fighting against evil. They don't think that they are evil. They are fighting against the evil. So this dichotomy is, in that sense, is very functional for me. They also convince themselves that with this Habel and Cain issue, there's it. I mean, although we are brothers, although they are twins, they are enemies. It's not only artists. Of course, the film is about the artists, but I mean, all the state employees. I was a teacher in the university back then in 2016 when this firing people, when this purge started, and I was on the target as well. I was not fired, but many of my friends were fired. All the state employees, all the state rooms, teachers, university teachers were under danger. So actually, it's for me, it's a kind of my story. I told Ilker when I read the story, and I was really impressed because he is telling my story. And maybe it's impossible for me to tell this story in Turkey because this is a very sensitive issue. And I was very impressed, but a colleague who is living in Germany tells my story. I mean, it was a very difficult and intense experience in those days. I mean, most of my friends lost their job. They found themselves in similar situations like this driver with their kids. They were unsure about the future of their kids. And they are still, some of them are still in the same position. Some people go to the court and went their works, but some courts rejected their appeal, and they are still unemployed. State employees are not in, now I resigned from the university, so I'm not a state employee, so I'm not in person. We can talk about psychology, psychological dynamics, blah, blah, blah. But community is something different. And community, first of all, there must be a dynamic which creates a kind of collective delusion. I mean, people should convince themselves, not only themselves, but your friend should convince the other, the other convince another one. And generally the leaders are very instrumental to spread this fear, spread this paranoia. You become starting a kind of collective delusion. And as if you started framing the enemy, there are always enemies, whether they are real, sometimes they are real, like Hamas, something they are complete imaginary, like Jews for Hitler. But there are always enemies. And if you are successful to frame these enemies as a threat to your survival, people can do anything, because for them, survival is the most important thing. And to survive, they can do anything. They can go further. And they say that if the feeling of this urgency starts, if you don't act, they will act. If you don't kill them, they will kill us. Like the Israel-Palestine issue. This circle starts the evil doing, I believe. And people don't realize that they are evil. They don't never say that they are the evil. I don't know if it will be screened in Israel. And there is another issue ongoing in Turkey, whether we should boycott Israel. Of course, there is a boycott in Israel, but this should it be extended to cultural boycott? I personally want my film to be shown in Israel. But there's a lot of pressure for the artists as well. Don't send your film to Israel. That's another issue we should discuss about. Wim Wenders is a great director. I was 20s when I first saw his films, and I was really impressed. But of course, I cannot agree with him. It's impossible. I mean, not only his position against this question about Palestine, but his statements about politics and cinema is, you know, I don't really believe that he's believing what he's... Because he did political things. I mean, he did political documentaries. For some countries, for the people in some countries, it is impossible to avoid politics. In Iran, you cannot avoid politics. In Turkey, in the last 10 years, you cannot avoid politics because politics is everywhere, determines every inch of your life. I mean, you can see it in Turkey easily. Every people speak politics. Everyone. I mean, even the most people who looks quite apolitical, they have an idea, they have a political stance. In such a polarized country, you cannot breathe without politics. Politics is not a profession in such countries. They are lives.
Your film has a very intense color scale of brown, yellow, black. How much influence do you have on these kind of visuals, or does your cameraman do a lot?
Of course, we discussed about it. We prepared a kind of look before the shooting. We used the elements of film noir, some expressionist filmmaker's style. Of course, I want to intensify this color of land, soil. I mean, that region is completely, has this yellowish tone, and to underline the effect of sun, we use this color, this yellowish black color. And we prepared the look. We shot again. against it, and at the end we made really little color correction. This fear of status is also an element. The fear sometimes can be against your life, but the fear of losing status is also very important, and especially in these kind of conflicts, especially in scapegoating the minorities. I mean, this fear that minorities will come and we will lose our identity. Germany will no longer be Germany. It will be Islam. I mean, in everywhere it's like that. And for the Jews, the Nazis, the main fear of the German nationalists at the beginning of the century was that Jews were rising in their status. They are becoming doctors, lawyers, blah, blah, and they did that. They are losing their status, especially the fear of people who is considered inferior. And they, if they become gain status, this becomes a great, huge fear for the people.
In modern societies, social media and the media in itself is essential to uphold authoritarianism and fake news. But your story is in a rural area where this plays almost no part at all. Was there ever an idea to bring these elements like mobile phones into the story?
In the village environment, you don't need mobile phone because, you know, face-to-face relationship is common. But if, of course, if you come to a larger society, I agree with you. Nothing is new. Nothing is invented by social media. I mean, fake news was everywhere, and Goebbels was producing fake news every day. But in social media, it became more important because people who believe in fake news find each other. These news are multiplying very easily. This, you know, because of this algorithms, fascists can find each other easily. I mean, maybe 10 years ago, they were very isolated, but now they find each other easy. So it's becoming more dangerous, but nothing new. As a historian, I can say that nothing new in this world of social media. Our reference was 2009 mainly, but in a village environment, you know, generally this environment has the feeling of timelessness. So I also used this to make it more global and above history all time. I'm thinking about it, but I have some strong roots in my country. I couldn't dare it, but we are always thinking about. I'm making a series. We'll make a series.
Would you like to say what it's about, the series?
It's about a class issue, a kind of class fight, class differences.